The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
A new poll finds that 1 in 3 Americans believe violence is justified if U.S. leaders fail to protect the country. A finding the pollster described as, quote, scary. 29% of those polled indicated they completely or somewhat agree with the statement, quote, if elected leaders will not protect America, the people must do it themselves, even if it requires violent actions.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
You know, that is a disturbing report. Yeah, that comes from the Hill. I don't know if you agree with that or not. I was shocked when I actually saw that. I want to talk to you a little bit about that today. In just a moment, Dr. Paul Kengor is going to be stopping by. And, of course, you are welcome to join us here anytime. You know the number. It's 888-914-9149. Good afternoon. If you want to know what the president's priorities are, look at what he proposes for a budget. I think it's an important conversation. President Joe Biden submitted a budget proposal to Congress. To say it's revelatory, it would be an understatement. His proposal would hike annual spending by around 20% or so. I mean, think about that. Just get your head around that for 1 second. If this proposal was to go through, it would hike annual spending by 20%+. I mean, that should give us all pause. Take a look at how many trillions of dollars are now being spent. Take a look at our federal deficit. Take a look at what the concern a lot of financial experts are having regarding inflation. According to the New York Times, the president is calling for the federal government to spend, this is the new billion. He wants to spend $6 trillion. Trillion's the new billion. $6 trillion. That's a lot of zeros. Just in the 2022 fiscal year. That starts in October of this year, by the way, if you're not familiar with how that works. So we're talking about total spending to rise about $8.2 trillion by 2031. Here's a question for you. Somebody answer this for me. Where's all the money going to come from? Where is all that money going to come from? It's going to come from you. It's going to come from your kids, right? You know where it's going to come from. Apparently, they're printing more of it, right? So what happens? It then raises taxes on corporations. It raises taxes on the very wealthy. And you might say, oh, that's okay, right? What the president plans on doing is spending. He plans on deficit spending. He's got a plan of $1.8 trillion being added to the federal debt pile right now by October of next year. And look, that's the highest federal spending that we've had since the Second World War. According to NationalReview.com, the two programs fueling the massive expenditures, guess what they are? You probably know, right? Biden's American Jobs Plan and then the American Families Plan. They all have great titles. They're such wonderful titles. The American Jobs Plan, that's got to be good. American Families Plan, that's got to be good. More than likely, the plan's not going to make it through Congress, so I doubt we're going to see it come to fruition without major modifications, but with the Congress as divided as it is, it's going to be a tough thing to get passed by the deadline on September 30th. But in other political news, too, and we can talk about this as well, the idea of a commission, and this is an issue I want to deal with, to look into the riot at the Capitol that took place on January 6th, that's also now hitting a major roadblock in the Senate. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, he's apparently lobbying his fellow Republican senators very hard. It's even been reported he's asking members to vote against it as a personal favor to him. As a personal favor. So, I mean, there's a lot going on. I mean, Dr. Kengor is going to be stopping by in a second. We'll talk to him about that and much more. But another major bill that's hitting roadblocks is the $1.7 trillion infrastructure bill that President Biden wants passed. I mean, Republicans have come up with their own infrastructure proposal, and that's almost a bargain at about a half, half off. They're asking for, they're proposing $928 billion, and their bill leaves out a lot of the goodies that the Dems want, like federally subsidized child care and some other stuff. But let's talk about it. Let's take a look at what's happening in the country. We'll take a look at communism. We'll take a look at all things, you know, political and national with Dr. Paul Kengor. And if you got a question, a comment, you want him to espouse on something, feel free to dial in. 888-914-9149. Dr. Kengor, of course, is a professor of political science at Grove City College. He wrote a book called The Devil and Karl Marx. It's one of his many books. That's his latest. And, you know, he's always always writing at The Spectator and a lot of other places. In fact, he just wrote an article I came across. I touched base with him on this one as well. I don't know if you've seen this one. In Persona Pelosi, we'll get his take on one of his latest at Crisis Magazine. Doctor, good to have you back. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks, Drew. Good to be back. And I got to say, you didn't ask me to say this, but I'm really enjoying your book on divine mercy.
It's
quite good. And I've been reading it the last couple weeks, and good job. very nice work.
I sent you a text because you said you were sitting in New York in some park somewhere, and you said, I'm reading your book. I'm really enjoying it. Nice job. And I think I texted back to you over the weekend. I said, you know, that's such a compliment coming from such a prolific author like you. I mean, you have cranked out some amazing works, you know, and everything from John Paul to Karl Marx. I mean, you name it, Dupe, so many of your wonderful works. So that is a compliment I take to heart, and I'm grateful for it.
Thanks. Yeah, and before you change the subject, I want to tell you that, yeah. that one of the sections that I really enjoy is when you talk about Faustina at the dance, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where she has the initial vision, where Jesus says, "Are you going to keep putting me off?" Right? And you point out that, you know, people standing there at that dance would see this Polish farm girl, probably wearing her best dress, yeah, right? The family's only dress that all the girls shared,
yeah,
and she's just there in the middle of the floor, kind of staring ahead. And then she says she has a headache. She kind of goes off to the side of the room, and everybody's wondering, what's wrong with her? And if they could only see what she saw, right?
Yeah, right.
At that moment, she's staring at Jesus, I think, crucified, right?
Yeah, he was bloodied and scourged and beaten. He appeared to her after he'd been tortured like that, so.
Right. Imagine that. And you say there that, you know, nobody realizes what happened at that moment to that farm girl of that night is gonna eventually change the world.
Yeah, so true.
And the idea that she would, I mean, people think about this, that at that moment she would pretty much dash out of that dance, right, and go to Warsaw,
yep,
right, pack her bags and go find a convent. I mean, imagine what her parents thought. Imagine what her family thought. She quite literally dropped everything, and at that moment, which, you know, if you or I saw Jesus crucified, we'd probably do the same thing, right? But still, that'd be a hard thing to explain to your mom and dad, right? But that's what she did, and she didn't have a phone to text them or call them or communicate with them. But she did that, and, you know, a few years later, well, she would go on to have all those revelations and then died at the age of 33,
yeah,
same age that Jesus died in 1938. With this message of divine mercy, and wow, do we need that message now, don't we?
Yeah, she predicted the Second World War when it would begin, and of course, even prophesied her own, you know, rise to the altars along with so much more. She was a prophet, like a prophet of old in our day. And one of the things that struck me about the revelation of Saint Faustina, and they apply so much to what we see happening in our culture today. The Lord told Saint Faustina, he says, "The world will have no peace until it turns with trust to my mercy." You know, and we,
yeah,
need that.
Yeah.
You know, mercy is the balm. It's the remedy for all the ills of the world today. And it's the only thing I think that holds back the hand of God, as you know. Also, you know, that vision she had of the angel of wrath coming to destroy a city because of the great sin of that of the not only the country but of the continent. You know, the abortion capital of Europe,
right,
at the time.
Right. Well, and a few years after that, a very similar phrase, Madame Chiang Kai-shek told Bishop Fulton Sheen in China that there would be no peace in China until China was Christian. And here we are some 80 years after that, and no abortions have been done anywhere in the world at the level that they have been in China. The only competitor would be communist Russia. And I heard, too, before I came on the news break, the story about the 80-year-old Polish woman that she was 3 years old, Drew, when the Nazis tattooed her, right? A Polish Jewish woman. And they put a tattoo on a 3-year-old, right? Identifying her as a Jewish girl. So, and Pope Francis met with that 80-year-old woman today or yesterday and kissed the tattoo. So anyone who thinks that this is, you know, a part of the world that no longer exists, I mean, there are still people around from that period. And of course, the Divine Mercy prophecy, which started with her death in 38 and suppressed all those years and argued about in the church, didn't really come to fruition until Faustina became the first saint of the new millennium, thanks to Pope John Paul II, who grew up a stone's throw away from Auschwitz in Poland. So all of this is just so relevant right now, and I think it's the message of our times, and obviously you do too, which is why you wrote this book.
Yeah, I was limited to about 140 pages for the book. I mean, there's so much more I wish I could put in, but we gave the book away for free. We gave over 100,000 copies away for free, so we had to limit some of our costs. A lot of people now have it, but you know. I could not agree with you more. I mean, I really do believe mercy. This is a revelation for our time. The Lord, Our Lady appeared and gave us this beautiful revelation of the rosary and how powerful it is. And I pray it every day, as I know you do. And then the chaplet in the 1930s, coming to St. Faustina, a prayer which, you know, a rosary I hold, the beads of which I hold in my other hand to pray. These are prayers that reach the throne of God. And it's God's mercy that we need. It was an interesting connection, too, just on the John Paul connection. You know, when he got shot in Vatican Square by Mehmet Ali Agha in 81 on the Feast of Our Lady of Fatima, and he was rushed to the Policlinico Gemelli, and, you know, they did this surgery on him, and he was recovering back in his hospital. But he asked for two things in that hospital bed. One was the third secret of Fatima, and the other was the diary of St. Faustina. And he wanted the diary of St. Faustina. So he was a man whose factory was not that far from her convent and who knew her well. And as you point out, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have Divine Mercy today. But at the same time, he fought those horrors of the 20th century. He saw the evils of Nazism and of communism. And, you know, he knew the evils that raged. And you write about him in your book, his connection to Ronald Reagan, you know, so... It was an amazing era.
Yeah, those two prophecies, sets of prophecies, are only about 20 years apart. So you had the Fatima prophecies in 1917, and Our Lady of Fatima first appearing to the shepherd children May 13th, 1917. And then Faustina is receiving all of those visions, revelations, throughout the 1930s.
Right.
So it really just goes to show, you know, the things that are seen and unseen. You know, here we are 100 years after that, and those things now are still coming to pass. And if Faustina's message is right, I mean, the ocean of mercy, the doors of mercy, I mean, you know, we could not sound apocalyptic about it, right? But her message was also a very apocalyptic one. I mean, we could well be living in those end times, or at least the time of the second coming. And, you know, they're just go through her diary, and there's I have them flagged. There's probably a dozen predictions like that. And yeah, the chaplet, have mercy on us and on the whole world. I mean, this is the time to seek that mercy now and to get it for others, you know, before it's quite literally too late.
You know, so interesting about your comment, Doctor. The vice postulator for the cause of St. Faustina, his name was Father Serafin Mikulenko, and we really owe him a tremendous debt of gratitude because he translated the diary. He was present for the beatification miracle. He was with Maureen Dygan when she was miraculously healed at the tomb of Faustina, and he was instrumental in Father Ron Pytel, who was the miracle that led to the canonization of St. Faustina. He worked behind the scenes with such humility and invisibility, but God recently called him home. He was another victim of COVID.
I didn't know he died from COVID.
It was a complication of it. You know, he ended up battling COVID was sent to the hospital. Really, it was COVID that ultimately took him, you know, in the end. He was up there in age, but and I had the great privilege of speaking to him just a few weeks prior to his death because I was working on the book, and I wanted to ask him about, you know, one of the stories that I remember hearing about how powerful the image was in bringing protection. But the thing he said to me, too, and you know, I'm always hesitant about dealing with this verbally or writing too much about it. He said that, you know, the Lord told St. Faustina, before I come as a just judge, I first come as a merciful Savior. But woe to those of you who do not recognize this time of my visitation. He called her to be the secretary of his mercy and to prepare the world for his glorious return, for his second coming. And Seraphim was convinced of that. Father Seraphim really believed that. Now, look, God may call you and I home today, may call us home in 30 days, I don't know, or 30 years. I don't know God's timeline, but we could be living in a very special moment in history. If you take a look at those Marian apparitions, too, across the centuries, the Virgin has always come, but she has never come with the frequency that she is coming today. Every habitable continent, there are reports of the Virgin Mary calling us to repent and to amend our lives. In fact, in Kibeho, Rwanda, a tiny landlocked country in the heart of Africa, it's known as the Switzerland of the Africans, the Virgin Mary appeared in that country back in 1981 and began giving a handful of seers there messages, you know, and she gave them prophecies about the future. One of the prophecies also dealt about the return of Jesus Christ. But in Rwanda, as you know from history, she also prophesied the genocide that would erupt in that country. And we know that 1 million people lost their lives to that. One of the largest exoduses in recent history took place. 2.3 million people fled the nation because of the Hutus turned on the Tutsis. But that's a church-approved apparition. And in that apparition as well, the Mother of God talked about the time in which we live. So to your point, you know, in what Faustina says in her diary, I don't know the day or the hour. Even, you know, nobody knows the day or the hour. Only God the Father knows. But it is really compelling, isn't it? As you take a look at these prophecies, you take a look at the rise in sin and immorality in our culture, and you take a look at the mercy of God sending the Mother in her apparitions and giving us saints like Faustina and so many others. The Lord told Faustina, he said, and she wrote, he said to her, you know, in the Old Testament, I sent prophets wielding thunderbolts. Today, I send you my messenger, referring to Faustina, with this message of mercy for the world. But
isn't that amazing?
To our, yeah. To our own peril, you know, if we ignore it, now we're going to face the consequences of it.
Yeah, and in fact, so I got it right here, the diary, it's section 83, and the Lord commanded her. He said, write this, before I come as the just judge, I am coming first as the King of Mercy. Yep. So it's great that he's indeed coming as the King of Mercy, but he's coming as a judge, mm-hmm. too. And he told her, this is section 429, you will prepare the world for my final coming. Right? You will prepare the world for my final coming.
Serious. I mean, how much clearer does it get, right?
And I'll give you one more. Before the day of justice, I am sending the day of mercy.
That's right.
That's section 1588. And Pope Francis declared a year of mercy. I guess it was, what, 2 or 3 years ago right? So we believe that the Pope has the authority to do those things, right? Make these declarations. So if we're in the period of mercy and the day of mercy has been declared, then we're absolutely living in that period of mercy. And the day of justice, one would think, is next, right? Yeah. Now, does next mean next week? Does it mean next year? It must mean next in God's plan, right?
No, sure.
And again, he told her, you will prepare the world for my final coming. I mean, that is so we may well be living in those times, Drew.
It's hard to get your head around that, though, isn't it? Because you always think that's down the road, some millennia from now or wherever. But some people, so there's got to be a generation that will experience that particular moment in time. There's an unapproved church apparition. There's one that millions of people have traveled to. It's called Medjugorje. And again, I submit myself to whatever the final authority of the church is regarding the apparitions of the Mother of God. In the same year that she appeared in Kibeho, Rwanda, she appears on June 24th in this place called Medjugorje. And, you know, it was under communist rule at the time. She gave a series of messages. The seers are given secrets about events that are going to unfold in the not-too-distant future, going to happen within their lifetime. Some of them deal with chastisement, with corrections, you know, spiritual corrections. Mm-hmm. But what I found interesting or compelling, I've been using that word a lot, the word compelling, I should say, what I found compelling about those apparitions abortions. The message is, the Virgin says the same thing you just highlighted in Faustina's work, that this is a time of mercy. She says God has given, allowed her to come to the human race with this message of reconciliation, of peace, of repentance. This is the time to do that, because when that time expires, then I do think we will see the hand of God. And unless we, you know, historically, if you look at Fatima, you know, the Second World War did not have to happen. The Virgin Mary told us what we had to do, to pick up the rosary, to pray. The communism did not have to spread her, you know, her evils. The atheistic communism did not have to spread throughout the world. We could have mitigated or alleviated all that. Today, we live in a time where we're having these unprecedented messages and visions, and we have mercy. We can avoid what looms in the future, but if we fail to do that, Doctor, I do believe there's consequence. So I don't know how you feel about that.
Sure. Well, and so you're talking about Marian apparitions, and again, to bring this back to Faustina. So I've got the diary right here. So Mary said this to Faustina, March 25th, 1936. You have to speak to the world about his great mercy and prepare the world for the second coming of him who will come, not as a merciful savior, but as a just judge. Right now, that comes after the period of mercy. And then Mary told her, oh, how terrible is that day. Yep. The angels tremble before it. Speak to souls about this great mercy while it is still the time for granting mercy. So that's March 1936. That's section 635 of the diary. That's 2 years before Faustina died. And Mary said almost the same thing to her in section 625 of the diary. So yeah, not only did the Lord say these things to Faustina, but the Blessed Mother as well. And again, this was the first saint of the new millennium, canonized by Pope John Paul II. We've got to take this seriously. If we're faithful Catholics, we got to take this seriously. And I guess the way to really look at it would be, you know, to quote the angel Gabriel, right? Be not afraid, but get your soul ready. And, you know, you and I, we talk about politics, culture, the state of the world. Yeah. I would say that America and the culture today, most people are not only not ready, right? But you know, they're behaving like it's the time of Sodom and Gomorrah, yeah, no. Right? Yeah. I mean, we're making our friend Scott Hahn has said before that, you know, it's like God owes Sodom and Gomorrah an apology, given what's going on in America today, right?
So true.
I mean, you know, we're far worse, far worse than the very worst things that happened there. And people compare us to, like, the fall of Rome. Rome looks positively holy, right, compared to what's going on in America and the West today. I mean, we better get it together quick.
You know, I could not agree with you more. I mean, you take a look at the culture of death. I mean, how many children have been sacrificed through abortion? Take a look at what we're doing at the end of life. You take a look at the contraceptive mentality. You take a look at the rejection of God outright. Take a look at the redefinition of marriage in our country. We totally destroyed that marriage. It's an abomination what has happened there. You take a look at the Equality Act and all the things that are going to happen to religious freedom and the conscience. I mean, take a look at what's happening with the whole, you know, gender fluidity issues in the culture. You take a look at Hollywood, and we can go through the whole litany of things that are now we're indoctrinating our kids with. It calls for the justice of God. But thank God for his mercy. That's what I want to say. Thank God for his mercy. And the Lord said the greater the sinner, the greater the right that they have to his mercy, and that no mind, be it human or angelic, will ever be able to fathom the depths of his mercy through all of eternity. That's the great mystery of the time, I believe, in which we live.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Today, the most dangerous enemy agent is not so much concerned with the secret information about weapons as he is with infiltrating the necessary departments of the government and shaping and controlling the actions of our nation so that the enemy is progressively winning without even firing a single shot. Now, I intend to name names.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was Senator McCarthy. He went after communism in his time. Archbishop Fulton Sheen, of course, very eloquent in his message against how evil it truly was. And of course, you know, this hails back all the way to 1917 when the Virgin Mary appeared to the Fatima children and talked about the fact that, you know, this nation, Russia, would spread its evils. It would spread atheistic communism throughout the world. And we saw the horrors that have come from it. And what was it an attack on? It was an attack on life. It was an attack on family. And you know, we've seen this in places like Cuba. For example, there was a man, I don't know if you heard this, there was a man from Cuba. I've had friends that have left that nation. Listen to what he said about communism. Listen to this.
Not only they have swallowed it, they're digesting it. Listen to the media. They're no longer objective. You can tell how much they hate this country. Look at our academia. Our kids are not being... They're indoctrinated. They're taught that America is a bad country, that we're a bunch of racists, that we're bad people and we have to pay back. If this country was racist, I wouldn't be here. If this country was a racist country, most of us wouldn't be here, because even some people in your family came from another country. This country was made of immigrants. Do we have racist people in this country? Of course we do. Do we have bad people? Yes, we do. Do we have bad teachers? Yes, we do. Do we have bad police people? Yes, we do. But don't blame the country for that, because we have a justice system that will penalize you and punish you if you are a bad person, if you are a racist. But don't make our children believe that we have to pay back because America is a bad country.
Yeah, and I have to agree with that. Jake found that piece of audio, and I don't think we are a bad country at all. I don't. I think we are a great nation. And I think we are one of those lights who are really shining some light on the evils of what we're seeing coming out of China and Russia and other places where communism has been tried, where it has failed, where it's continuing to be promoted. And it's an attack on family, ultimately. And Doctor, you and I were talking during the break. This hails back to 1917, before we saw the spread of communism as we know. This was prophesied as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And one of my favorite quotes is from Pope Pius XII. And I knew this before I was Catholic, Drew, because it was a favorite quote of Ronald Reagan. And Pius XII said, quote, "Into the hands of America, God has placed an afflicted mankind." Into the hands of America, God has placed an afflicted mankind. And he said that in an exclusive interview that he did with Life magazine in the 1940s. And Reagan, who was a Protestant, loved that quote, because, you know, the Pope believed that it was America, incumbent upon America at this point in time, after World War I, after World War II, the Cold War with the communists on the march. He knew that only America had the ability and the will and, you know, the moral compass, the moral wherewithal to recognize the threat that atheistic communism was. And by the way, that quote too was also, it was quoted by John F. Kennedy. And to bring this back to McCarthy, John F. Kennedy, our first Catholic president, who was intensely anti-communist, was a good friend of Joe McCarthy. McCarthy was close with the entire Kennedy family. This is amazing. Robert F. Kennedy, RFK, worked for Joe McCarthy, and RFK's first daughter, Joe McCarthy was her godfather.
Wow.
Joe McCarthy actually dated one of the Kennedy girls. One thing that's not appreciated about Joe McCarthy, because he's been so trashed by liberals in America in particular, the guy was a solid Roman Catholic. And a big part of his really intense anti-communism was his Catholic faith. So that's not appreciated. And the Fatima prophecies, one of them that is still with us today, one element of it. Remember Cardinal Caffara, Drew,
oh, yeah,
who died just like 2 or 3 years ago. And he said that he received a letter from Sister Lucia, who told him, quote, "A time will come when the decisive battle between the kingdom of Christ and Satan will be over marriage and the family. And he said that that decisive battle between the Lord and Satan over marriage and the family, quote, is being fulfilled today. Being fulfilled today. He said that Satan right now is setting up an anti-creation, with false models of marriage, false models of family, false models of gender, false anthropological models of humanity. He said this is Satan's anti-creation. It's being fulfilled today. And Cardinal Cafara, to really connect all of this together, he was the founding president of Pope John Paul II's Institute for Studies on Marriage and the Family. Wow. And this is really kind of chilling. When John Paul II, on May 13, 1981, was in St. Peter's Square, and he was driving through there, and Mahmoud Ali Asha, on the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima, was getting ready to place two bullets in him. That day, at 5:13, 1981, at 5:13 p.m. on the clock, when Asha shot John Paul II, John Paul II, on that day in St. Peter's Square, was going to announce the creation of his Institute for Studies on Marriage and the Family.
Wow.
So had Asha succeeded on that day, that would have killed not just John Paul II, it would have killed the Pontifical John Paul II Institute for Studies on Marriage and the Family, which survived like John Paul II did, which was headed by Cardinal Cafara, and which Sister Lucia told Cafara that the final battle between Christ and Satan is going to be over marriage and the family and is being fulfilled today.
What an amazing century the 20th century was and where we are. You just take a look at the figures from Maximilian Kolbe to John Paul II to Faustina to the Fatima Seers. I mean, you go through it all, Archbishop Fulton Sheen, John Paul II. It is unbelievable. And if you go back to 1884, you have the vision of Pope Leo XIII, who, you know, had this experience where he heard a conversation between Satan and God, and he wanted more time and more power to prove to God that, you know, souls didn't love him and that he could show that. And supposedly, according to the vision, the Lord permitted him a period of 100 years or so. And Leo XIII died in 1905, and many people speculated, hey, was the 20th century this period in which he's been given this time? So it makes me wonder about the times in which we live. And then you look at the things you just pointed out. We know that John Paul was shot on what, May 13th? But I forgot about that fact. He was shot at 5:13 on 5:13?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, George Weigel in Witness to Hope gives the time. When I wrote A Pope and a President, I was trying to get the exact time on the clock. I noticed a number of people said something like a quarter past the hour. And so I went to Weigel's book and I said, whoa, 5:13 p.m.? Right, it matched the date on the calendar, 5/13/1981. Yeah, and also too, this is an important thing that Lucia told Cardinal Cafara. She said the time will come, the decisive battle between Christ and Satan over marriage and the family. And the next line in that letter, Drew, is this: and those who will work for the good of the family will experience persecution and tribulation.
Wow.
Those who will work for the good of the family will experience persecution and tribulation. So those of us today who are standing up for the church's position on family and marriage and everything else, the fact that we're being persecuted for it is exactly what was predicted.
I'm just thinking about that because, you know, you saw what happened with the nanny state, right? You saw what happened with socialism. And what we're seeing right now with the Equality Act and others, I mean, it really is an attack on the family, isn't it? We want to take authority away from parents. We want to indoctrinate, inform the next generation of kids. And there's really an evil undercurrent that runs through all this.
Yeah, it really is. And Cafara said that it really is as if Satan right now is looking at the Lord and saying, I will fashion another creation,
yep.
Right? And he said too, and man and woman will look at this other creation, this anti-creation that I'm fashioning, and they will say, we like it better. Wow. We like it better here. And that's happening too. I mean, a time will come when they will call good evil and evil good. You know, those of us who say, well, you know, the scriptures say God made them male and female, right? Yeah. Two genders, not 71 different genders, right? Jesus said a time will come when the man will leave Man and woman will leave their parents and cling to each other and become one flesh. And we point to that and we're persecuted for it. Instead, we have people in our culture saying, no, I prefer this other model of creation, right? I like this idea of Facebook having 71 gender options, right? I like multiple forms of marriage that we can come up with our own definition. And that was something that Lucia warned Cardinal Cafara about.
Wow, absolutely fascinating. Well, we'll take a few of your calls. If you want to join us, the toll-free here is 888-914-9149. Let's go to Joe. He's listening in California. Joe, thanks for dialing in. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. One, I wanted to thank you for mentioning Joe McCarthy. He's really gets a bad rap, and I question why he gets such a bad rap, really. But my point in calling was that Marxism in the form of under the auspice of Catholic social justice teaching, it's really a perversion of it, the way it's being taught with critical race theory and kind of gender neutrality and sexuality being not exclusively heterosexual is being taught presently in Catholic schools of some denominations. I can't speak to all of them, but I have children in a Catholic high school, and there's a battle going on about it right now, but it has definitely come to Catholic schools.
Well, Joe, thank you.
No question about it. Yeah, he's absolutely right. And a fellow writer of, along with me at Tan Books, Noel Mehring, just did a book called Awake, Not Woke. And it's a Christian response to what she calls the cult of progressive ideology. And she had a piece for National Catholic Register last week, which I think was one of the most popular posts up there, about precisely this, Drew, the different Catholic schools out there that are implementing critical race theory. I saw Megyn Kelly, formerly of Fox News, interviewed by Bill Maher, of all people. Bill Maher's upset about this, right? I mean, there's a lot of people on the left who are upset about this. And she pulled her kids out of private school in New York. I think it was a Catholic school. Because because of precisely this kind of stuff, and they were spending time in the classroom, not learning about not writing about the magisterium or the catechism, but writing letters to the offices of the Cleveland Indians, quite literally, right? You're demanding that they change the name of the Cleveland Indians. I mean, this kind of stuff is rampant right now. It's on the loose. And what's worse is if you stand up and call it out and oppose it, then you're the bad guy. And by the way, to kind of bring that back to Joe McCarthy, yeah, one of the reasons Joe McCarthy got a bad rap, I can tell you, is for simply calling it out. And I've got colleagues out there who say, no, McCarthy went too far and so forth. And look, before there was Joe McCarthy, there was Martin Dies of the House Committee on Un-American Activities. Before that, there was Woodrow Wilson's Attorney General, the Fighting Quaker. I'm trying to think of what his name was. Any of these guys who came along that were intense anti-communists that were pointing out what was going on, they were vilified. They were demonized. And that still goes on today. Oftentimes, the left, they howl the loudest, not at things that are going on their side, which we all ought to be offended by, but by the people who are blowing the whistle and calling out and telling them to stop it. And that applied to McCarthy. It applied to to a lot of these schools today.
Yeah, my guest today, Dr. Paul Kengor. We only have a few minutes, a short break. When we come back, we'll grab some of your calls. If you want to get in and join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. The number's 888-914-9149. Just having a great conversation today, and love you to be part of it. We'll continue our conversation when we return. Stay with us.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Absolute submission. Absolute loss of individuality. But once in 30 years, the dictator will let them have a shock, and they will suddenly begin eating one another up, just as a precaution against boredom. And then, Dostoevsky, knowing that this philosophy that has no respect for persons, that speaks of the love of the masses, will be a menace to the world, tells how it will win over does not mention America. But how true, he was writing too soon for us, perhaps. But he told how all the intelligentsia, the riffraff, the false liberals, without a fine distinction of right and wrong, will follow after these individuals. A teacher who laughs with children at their God is on our side.
That was none other than the great Archbishop Fulton Sheen, whose beatification looms. And as I said, he was a clarion voice against the evils of communism. You know, he once very famously said that communism is the final logic of the dehumanization of man. He says the danger today isn't believing that we're not sick people, that we're only a sick society. I thought that was very thought-provoking, to say the least. And I'm here with a man who understands and who has written about this in a number of the great works that he's done. Dr. Paul Kengor is a professor of political science, and he wrote a book that, you know, if you want a real perspective, pick up The Devil and Karl Marx. It's an excellent read. Everyone I spoke to said it's one of his best. One of my favorites is actually The Pope and the President. If you've been enjoying the conversation about John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, a whole lot of other, pick that book up. And Doctor, I'm assuming they're available at all major bookstores or Amazon or Catholic bookstores. What's the best way to get those books?
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's interesting, Drew, other than, say, Marx and Ronald Reagan and John Paul II, the one figure I probably quote the most in both those books is Fulton Sheen. And as it just kind of hits me right now, the man was so prophetic on everything that he said. He was so brilliant. He had such a way with words. He was so incredibly well-read. Quoting Dostoevsky there in that clip, you know, Dostoevsky said, if God does not exist, everything is permissible, right? If God does not exist, everything is permissible. And here we are in America today, where a higher percentage than ever before in American history of people who think that God doesn't exist and everything is becoming permissible, right?
Yeah.
So you could get those books at Amazon, and The Devil and Karl Marx is published by Tan Books. And so you can get that at the Tan Books website. I wrote a piece for Crisis Magazine a few months ago about how that book, advertising for it, was banned on Facebook.
That's
Drew.
Crazy.
It's unbelievable. In fact, they banned advertising for a number of Tan books, one of which was a Stations of the Cross for kids.
That is silly.
They banned. They said it contained sensational content. Offensive images, right? The offensive image, I guess, was the cartoon rendering of a bloodless Jesus corpus on a cross, which was, you know, didn't meet Facebook's standards for decency.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah, I guess I'll agree with them that the cross is offensive, you know, but you know, this is what we're facing in this culture of ours.
Facebook has way too much power. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's the things that they're banning, what they're allowing now, what they're permitting again. Yeah, their whole policy on COVID has radically changed, as you know. I only have a few minutes, Doctor. Let's jump into the phones. Our number's here, 888-914-9149. Kathy's listening in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Kathy, thanks for joining us. Good afternoon.
Dr. Kengor, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm really enjoying this discussion, and I have always wanted to ask you, Dr. Kengor, after reading A Pope and a President, it seemed to me like after the wall came down, after everything that President Reagan and Pope John Paul had done to fight communism, it seemed like we stopped talking about it after that. Is it just me, or did we let our guard down?
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. You're exactly right. That's exactly what happened. And I was giving speeches, doing talk radio in the 1990s, warning people that we are not teaching the lessons of the Cold War and communism and what has happened. And even people on our side who said, come on, you're starting to sound like, you know, Joe McCarthy, right? We won the Cold War. It's over. Hey, Kengor, call off the Red Crusade, all right? You know, I guess if you look on a map, the USSR doesn't exist anymore, right? Berlin Wall is down. And I said, yeah, but you know, our church described communism as a satanic scourge. It wasn't supposed to go away. We need to understand this ideology. And even that having been said, I'm surprised at the level to which it has come back, especially with younger people today not only saying that they support communism, but saying that they support socialism, not understanding the differences. The recent poll said something like a third of millennials believe that private property should be banned, which is just insane. Another favorite survey, kind of outrageous survey point, a third of Americans generally believe that George W. Bush killed more people than Joseph Stalin. I mean, it's wow. Just absolute madness. But it comes down to education. People aren't learning this. They're not learning it in their schools. Instead, they're learning things like critical theory, critical race theory, gender theory, which Pope Francis has called satanic gender theory. And it's why you need formats, media like Relevant Radio to be able to try to provide a great corrective and some remedial education to fix what hasn't been taught.
Yep, you got it. Hey, Kathy, thank you for the call. Doctor, let's jump to Mike in Redding, California. Mike, good afternoon. You are on the air.
Good afternoon. Very interesting conversation. I'd actually called in about something else, hung up, and then got in on this. My great-grandmother is named Catherine Palfrey Baldwin. She wrote a book in 1954, and she got to testify in front of the U.S. Senate. And in that book is her testimony to keep us out of the United Nations and away from the communism. She was a very, very powerful lady in New York. And one of her guests at dinner very often was Bishop Fulton Sheen.
Wow.
In fact, the family still has the couch that he used to sit on.
Wow.
Wow.
So I grew up with this, you know, I mean, from the time I was in the parlor, I grew up in New Hampshire, and the adults were talking, and when Bishop Fulton Sheen came on TV, we did not make a sound.
That's so true.
And I believe everything that you're saying, this is, you know, people have got to listen.
Yeah. I love it, Mike. First of all, your couch is going to be a second-class relic, you know?
right.
Yes.
With him, so hold on to that thing. But yeah, my father, who was a broadcaster in the New England areas in Boston, he said, you know, he'd go to the bars, you know, afterwards, and when Sheen would come on the air, to the same thing that happened in your family, the bartenders and everybody, they would stop serving drinks. They'd turn on the Sheen for that half hour. Everybody watched what he had to say. So he won an Emmy, I guess, against Milton Berle, too, at the time. So he was something else. Doctor, I'll let you respond to
number one
a couple
show.
Minutes here. It was amazing.
Yeah, Mike, don't throw out that couch, like Drew said. I talked to somebody who told me that his grandmother's two favorite shows, that she grew up in, he grew up in Pittsburgh, and his grandmother's two favorite shows were Studio Wrestling and Fulton Sheen. So,
that's
and
hilarious.
She would do her rosary while she watched both, right?
That's awesome.
And to bring this back to education and Kathy's point from Wisconsin, I've had people, kind of old-timers, tell me, in fact, my friend Annette Kirk, who was the widow married to the great Russell Kirk, she told me, she said, look, when we were in Catholic school in the 40s and 50s and 60s, we were praying to Our Lady of Fatima for the conversion of Russia.
Right.
You know, we did that every day. And by the way, politically speaking, they were all Democrats.
Yeah.
They were all kind of anti-communist, you know, Kennedy, Truman, Democrats.
Yeah.
And instead, in Catholic schools, not only are they not learning about Fatima, but the idea that they could instead be learning critical race theory and gender theory and not learning about biblical natural marriage as defined by the catechism, it's really quite sad.
Hey, doctor, let me sneak this last call in here. Carolyn's listening in New Jersey. Her family's escaped from communism in 48 and in the 80s. Carolyn, good afternoon.
Yes, hi. So my mother's family escaped from communism in 48, and so did my father's. And then years later, I met my husband, who also escaped from communism in 85. And I think the most surprising to them is, gosh, we escaped communism, but it certainly feels like we're going in that direction here. And I also wanted to say that, you know, people are lacking, I think the young people in the country are lacking critical thinking to understand that this ideology is not a good ideology that just happens not to work. It is a bad ideology, intrinsically evil. And I think the society has to stop saying, oh, it's a good ideology, you know, that doesn't work. It's intrinsically evil.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have many stories, but I know there's not
well,
time.
Thank
but
you.
I just wanted to comment.
Thank you, Carolyn. And, Doctor, I'm going to give you the final word. I have less than a minute for you.
Yeah, it's exactly right. It's not only that it doesn't work because it fails economically, but like John Paul II and Pope Benedict XVI said, it fails anthropologically. It fails to get human nature right. And as our church said, it fails most of all because it's diabolical. This is an evil of the spiritual order, our church said in Quadragesimo Anno. So that's what we're fighting against. Not the current powers, but something deeper than that.
My thanks to you, Doctor. It's always a delight having you on the air. Check out Dr. Paul Kengor's book, The Pope and the President. His latest is The Devil and Karl Marx. You won't regret it. Both great reads. Doctor, I'm out of time. We'll catch up again soon, okay? Thanks for so much time. Until our paths get crossed, I'll be praying for you. Please pray for me. We'll talk again tomorrow.